Good morning, everyone. I'm Father Doug Krebs, and I am the judicial vicar for the Diocese of Bismarck, which basically means that a few years ago, the bishop didn't think I was smart enough, and he sent me back to get some more schooling, and so last year I finished 23rd grade. So I feel pretty good that I'm finally done with school, hopefully at least. But what I do for the diocese is I work there full-time. That's my full-time assignment, and I work on all the marriage and declaration and nullity cases. And so most weekends, I fill in throughout the entire diocese. I was up in Crosby. I was in Bowman, Tioga. I fill in all over the place. And so when I fill in, the bishop and I have decided that I should preach on marriage. And so that's why the gospel today was different, because he allows me to switch the gospel. So first, I want to be abundantly clear that I am not an expert on marriage, lived day in and day out, because I'm obviously not married. I don't plan on getting married. I did want to get married in high school and college and lived a normal high school life, had girlfriends, played sports, all those things. And I never thought I would become a priest, and I never thought I would be doing this assignment either. But later on, I heard the call and became a priest, and I love being a priest. And so if there's any young men out there, or you know any young men out there, encourage them to give the seminary a try. It's a beautiful life to be a priest. But my assignment, though, is not to know the lived experience of marriage. It's to know whether a marriage was validly contracted on the day of the wedding or it wasn't. And I will explain that as time goes on. I also want to begin by stating that our goal in life as Catholics is to be followers of Jesus, to be his disciples. Jesus knows that we're sinners. Jesus knows that our lives can be really messy at some times, but he nonetheless is calling us to conversion and to follow him and to be faithful to his teachings, even when he knows it can be difficult for us. Remember that our hearts are made for more. Our hearts will not be fulfilled by anything on this earth. One of the most basic Christian principles is Jesus is our true source of happiness and fulfillment in life. Because he's infinite, and our hearts will only rest in him. Therefore, one's spouse, though very important, the spouse will not cause the fulfillment that Jesus can. Before I get into the words of Jesus in the gospel, I just want to explain a little bit about what takes place at a wedding. The couple comes before God freely and without force. They're actually the ones who want to get married, and they are the ministers of the sacrament of matrimony, meaning that the priest or deacon are not the ministers of the sacrament of matrimony. The priest or deacon are very passive, actually, and basically stand there and say, I heard you loud and clear. This is what you guys want for each other. This is what you're consenting to and agreeing to. Which then kind of causes a question, well, what are they agreeing to? What are they consenting to? Or a kind of broader question would be, well, what is marriage then? Well, marriage is a special agreement, a special contract, or what God calls a covenant. So in any contract or covenant, there are terms that the parties agree upon, in this case, the couple. And the words that the couple say to each other or that they're agreeing to are, and many of you have said this yourselves, I take you to be my wife or husband. I promise to be faithful to you in good times and in bad, in sickness and in health, to love you and to honor you all the days of my life. Therefore, the couple themselves is agreeing that they want their marriage to be exclusive, meaning that they only want two people involved in this marriage, not a third party on the side. They're also agreeing that they want their marriage to be indissoluble, which basically just means that the only way that the marriage will end is by death of one of the spouses. Therefore, it follows that no civil authority or religious authority has the power to break that matrimonial covenant. Once again, it is only death of one of the spouses. Therefore, even if civil divorce would take place, only the civil effects, meaning the civil duties or benefits, would be removed, and the marriage itself would remain intact. Meaning basically that if civil divorce takes place, the divorce itself does not dissolve the matrimonial covenant, and the marriage still exists between the parties, or the couple in this case. Now to the gospel. Jesus says, "Therefore, what God has joined together, no human being must separate. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery." Jesus is clearly aware of our culture and situation now and when he was roaming this earth, but he still states that if divorce would take place, then a remarriage would be sinful. So that statement can get confused very easily. So in reality, what it is it's the civilly attempted second marriage is what is sinful, not necessarily the divorce. So then that leads to a question: is civil divorce allowed? And the answer is yes. In certain circumstances, it's allowed, where they can no longer live with each other anymore. And one terrible example of this would be the case of abuse. The couple should obviously not live together. They should obviously separate. God nor the church would want anyone to remain in a harmful situation. But even in a terrible situation like abuse, especially if it started later on, the marriage itself still remains intact, even if they're civilly, or if they're separated and civilly divorced. Therefore, this doesn't allow for a so-called second marriage to someone else. And this is what Jesus is referring to in the gospel. So then some of you might be asking, well, Father, what do you do? What is your assignment? What do you do at the diocesan offices every day? Well, I work on all the declaration of nullity cases, commonly known as annulments. But first, I want to state that the term annulment is not actually correct. It's not the term that the church uses on an official basis, because the term annulment would refer to or imply that something is being annulled, that something existed at one point, and then later on down the road, it was annulled, canceled, or dissolved in some sort of way. Well, the real term, the declaration of nullity, is exactly what the words mean. It means that it's declaring that the marriage was null from the beginning, or that the marriage was never truly contracted on the day of the wedding, even though it looked like a normal wedding ceremony. So the declaration of nullity then is not the breaking of a bond or dissolving of marriage in any sort of way, because the church doesn't even have the power to dissolve a marriage. Once again, a marriage is only dissolved by death of one of the spouses. So therefore, a declaration of nullity then is actually a court case. It's actually a trial. And I am one of the three judges that looks at all the marriage cases. So a declaration of nullity is when one or both of the spouses is then asking the church to investigate and make a judgment if the marriage was truly contracted on the day of the wedding. Once again, even though there might have been a normal wedding ceremony. The church then needs evidence to show that the covenant never truly was established between the couple. So let's take a step back and look at it a little bit more from a positive angle. What makes a valid marriage? Or how does somebody enter into a valid marriage? Well, both of the spouses on the day of the wedding, that's what we're really looking at, is the day of the wedding need to be free and not forced into marriage. They need to have the psychological capabilities, and they need to have the right intention to enter into marriage. And Catholics need to be married through the Roman Catholic Church or get a dispensation from the bishop. So if one of these requirements is lacking or missing in any sort of way, then the marriage consent was invalid and the matrimonial bond was never created. So an extreme example of this would be the case of where one of the spouses prior to marriage was abducted and then basically forced into the marriage due to threats. The spouse that was threatened may have showed up on the wedding day, may have said all the right words, but wasn't freely doing so. Therefore, this so-called spouse never really consented to marriage, and the marriage never really existed. Another example would be if one of them in the couple is Catholic, and the couple only married outside of the church or just simply civilly through the justice of peace, meaning they didn't get married through the Catholic Church in any sort of way, then the marriage would be invalid and the matrimonial covenant would have never been established from the beginning. It would be even more problematic and sinful if one or both of them was married validly to someone else prior to this new civil union. And this is what Jesus is referring to in the gospel. So just in any court case or criminal case, evidence is needed for proof. So in a criminal case, someone is presumed innocent until proven guilty. For marriage, it is presumed valid until proven with enough evidence that it's invalid. All or most of the evidence needs to refer to the moment of consent on the wedding day. Therefore, most of the time, events that occur after the wedding and throughout the marriage, let's say 10, 15, 20 years into the marriage, such as infidelity, abuse, addictions, these things that develop after the wedding, they may not be evidence that prove that the marriage was never contracted. We're mostly looking at how the relationship began, not how it ended. Just because the relationship broke down later on does not mean that the marriage wasn't validly contracted on the day of the wedding from the very beginning. Therefore, if there truly isn't enough evidence to prove that the marriage was invalid, then it's presumed to be a validly contracted marriage, which means that there is no guarantee if somebody would approach the tribunal at the diocese that their marriage would be deemed invalid from the get-go. Because the goal of the process, like any court case, is to seek the truth and not to hand out so-called annulments. So I know this homily is super long. I admit that completely. It's way too long. I don't know what to cut out, but we're almost done, so just bear with me a little bit longer. Lastly, can Catholics in these irregular marital situations receive communion and go to confession? Well, I'll explain with a few examples. In a case of a Catholic who is married only civilly and not in the Catholic Church, then the Catholic cannot receive communion or absolution in confession until they're married in the Catholic Church, because they have not truly made a matrimonial covenant with each other. Another example would be if a Catholic was married validly in the church and then got civilly divorced and civilly married someone else outside of the church. This person also would not be able to receive communion or absolution in confession, Because in both of these examples, they would be living with and acting as if they were married to someone that they're not actually married to. And this is where the problem lies. If they don't intend to change their situation in life, which is objectively sinful, then there's no true repentance or contrition. And if there's no repentance or an intention to amend one's life, then absolution cannot be given. The last example is someone who is married validly in the church, but separates and is civilly divorced, but never attempts marriage with another person. That person is free to receive communion and absolution in confession because they're not in a stable state of adultery. So I know this topic can be very, very difficult for many, and I empathize with that completely because I work with these people and I work on this stuff every day. But I have found that wherever I go, people have tons of questions when they ask or when they find out what I do for the diocese. And I think people have a lot of questions because this affects all of us in some sort of way. And so I just wanted to give a brief explanation. I could have sat here for 4 days, which I'm pretty sure you're glad I didn't speak much longer. But I've left pamphlets in the entryway, in the main entryway. If you want to get more information, you want to contact us, we'll do whatever we can to help. Or if you just want to refer somebody, we will do whatever we can to help, but in the end, we can only do so much because the truth is the goal of the process. So if you remember anything from this entire homily, if you walk away with anything that you remember, remember that Jesus is the true source of our happiness in life. Jesus is the person who totally fulfills us and completes us. And all of us are here because we believe that in some way. We believe that Jesus is the one who fulfills us. And all of us are here too. We just want to follow him and follow his teachings. And he gave us his teachings because he wants what's best for us. He wants us to be happy with him on this earth and in heaven.